Welcome to month one investable E2R briefing that covers the trading period of the new year from the 1st to the 31st of January 2024. Hopefully you will find it interesting as we look closer at what is happening within the credit group. Firstly, Rob will be discussing trade finance transactions during January and give a refresh on the core principles credit was built on. Next, George will show you some of the work that goes on at the deal desk and some of the potential projects him and the team are looking at. We will also be looking at our monthly segments on the Seaborne reports and any updates on the European and global economies. And lastly, we'll be looking at the briefing itself and some of the key information from it with some updates on credit. So for our first topic, I'll hand you over to Rob, who's a member of our trade desk.
Thanks, Ruby, and good afternoon all. So today, instead of highlighting a current trading originator, I want to take a moment to discuss the in-depth review conducted by our trade desk and treasury team relating to a potential new finance deal with a Dubai-based company established in 2016. This company specializes in providing freight services within the dry bulk market, facilitating the transportation of various commodities such as rice, iron ore, coal, steel, and fertilizer from India and Thailand to destinations in East Africa and Asia. As standard procedure, once a potential new deal is passed the trade desk from our deal desk, the trade desk initiate a rigorous examination of the company's operations, starting by issuing our comprehensive documentation package to the originator. Our objective is always to ensure the accuracy and reliability of the information that was initially provided to the deal desk. In this particular case I'm talking about, we received documents and after our initial analysis, it became apparent that the described trade processes were not quite as straightforward as initially portrayed to the deal desk. Through a comprehensive examination of documents from a previous executed trade by the originator, we identified additional parties involved between the originator and the vessel owner and between the originator and the commodity owner. A notable issue we discovered was the lack of clarity regarding the payee of voyage costs, and this posed a significant challenge for us as it impeded our ability to establish necessary assignments over the shipping costs and cargo. The assignment is a legal document that instructs the party making the payment to make payment to credit and not the originator, or any other party for that matter. The documentation that we received informed us that the commodity owner can nominate the entity that pays for the cargo and the voyage costs while the cargo is en route, and unfortunately we can't accept that, as it's a clear indication that the cargo is not sold prior to it loading onto the vessel and it will only be sold while in transit. Deal Desk had confirmed verbally and in writing that the cargo was always sold prior to loading. Despite this, the document said otherwise. In fact, the document said that the discharge port would only be nominated when the vessel passed Singapore on the way to China, depending on the buyer of the commodity. So, in line with our policy, credit only funds shipping of cargo that is sold before it's loaded onto the vessel. We spent a lot of time reviewing the documents supplied in relation to the sample voyage, and further scrutiny revealed inconsistencies in the information provided to our deal desk at the beginning of the process. This included discrepancies in contract execution methods to discrepancies in billing processes, and our review highlighted several issues that raised concerns that unfortunately couldn't be overlooked. And of particular concern was the discovery that cargo sales occur during loading or the voyage itself, which is contrary to our established policies. While we understand that operational nuances may evolve over time, fundamental changes to how the originator described to the deal desk how they conduct their business significantly impacted our ability to approve this finance deal. Our structured approach relies on written communication to the potential originator that is confirmed back to us in writing so that there are no misunderstandings. And despite the applicant confirming the structure, which clearly stated that the cargo is sold and they have direct engagement with the vessel owner, these key terms were found to be breached. Trade Desk and Treasury's findings ultimately resulted in this particular deal being set aside and not being approved. The originator in question has been advised that if they conduct business as they originally agreed with the deal desk, we will review this again, but for now, we will not be financing this trade. In conclusion, while we remain committed to writing new business and supporting trade, it's imperative that we prioritize integrity and transparency in our evaluation process. Moving forward, we will continue to uphold strict standards to ensure the integrity of our investor funds. So I'll pass you now over to George, who can discuss some of the other potential transactions DealDesk are exploring, and hopefully we will see more success in those deals.
Thank you, Robert, and good afternoon, everyone. So 2024 continues to be an immensely exciting time for the DealDesk. With the recent launch of our new website, Credit Innovation, this new website will work in conjunction with trade credit and credit shipping. However, will be targeted at generating inquiries in innovative, cutting-edge and state-of-the-art special projects. And we aim to delve into the world of AI and robotics also. And we're all very excited about that indeed. It's early days for us with this new website. However, in the spirit of interesting and unusual projects, we are already in discussions with a company based in South Africa who came to us with a very out-of-the-ordinary project. This company's core business is selling copper concentrate from Zambia to customers in China, but they have another project where they plan to supply an active mine with a chromium wash plant. Okay, so this is an obscure type of project where we will not be dealing with this as a standard asset finance. However, we will facilitate the transaction as a trade finance, as this originator has found somebody who will rent them the wash plant. The concept here of the wash plant is to essentially wash the mined chromium to achieve the optimal chromium product with minimal impact to the environment. The mined chromium is fed into like an ore feeder, which then moves into a jaw crusher. From there, it moves into a large spiral chute. And with further processing, it then results into 1 millimeter in diameter chromium particles. And then after further concentration, this actually results in the highest possible quality chromium powder. This is all done on site at the mine. Credit knows this market and product intimately because we provide finance to a key distributor of Metso in the UK. Metso are seen as a world leader in the manufacture of this plant and equipment, with many customers mandating that they will only buy and use Metso plant in their quarries and mining operations. One such company is CRH Tarmac in the UK. Then in a completely different type of transaction, we're also discussing a seafood deal with a company based in United Arab Emirates. This transaction they want to fund is to buy frozen tuna from a supplier in South Africa and sell to a buyer in Spain and the Seychelles, and they plan to do this multiple times a month. They have many global clients in the seafood industry, and they pride themselves in providing the highest quality seafood, adhering to all global quality standards. They also utilize state-of-the-art techniques to ensure that their clients know the traceability of all their products. They've created a digital product, which is essentially like an app that allows their customers to trace the exact details of the seafood that they purchase. So that's including like pinpointing the exact location where it was caught, where it was farmed, and the exact route of transport to the arrival destination, also including the exact time stamping as well. So we're still quite active in discussing potential shipping deals also. One company we are currently speaking to is based in Slovakia. This company was founded in 2007 and has gradually expanded its fleet from year to year just to satisfy the needs of their clients. The company started as a small operator, but has grown into a leading company for transport of liquid cargo by internal and international waterways. They are now market leaders in the field of river traffic of petroleum products. The current deal we're in negotiations with involves their purchase of a new tanker. So as we've discussed chromium in the briefing today, I want to finish off by giving some interesting facts on this product, which you may find interesting. Stainless steel, for instance, is extremely hard and resists corrosion. Okay, so this is due to the addition of chromium to the steel. And in fact, approximately 75% to 85% of the chromium commercially produced is used to make alloys such as stainless steel. Chromium is also used to prepare pigments in items such as glass, rubies, and emeralds. It can be used to color glass and emeralds green, and it can be used to color rubies red. So thanks very much for your time, everyone. It's always a pleasure. And back over to you now, Ruby.
Thanks, George. As always, it's nice to hear about some of the deals that you and your team are looking at. Hopefully in the future, we will be discussing some of these in our trade section of the briefing. So as discussed before, Credit will continue to stay informed on what's going on in the world when looking for new business. Trades that are meaningful and have an impact in today's current affairs will always be available, as they're what the world and the market is focusing on. So looking to the seaborne reports that cover the major activities that affect shipping and the economy, we see that the ongoing Israeli-Hamas war has caused a lot of focus on increasing risks for all financial markets. This is leaving investors around the world patiently waiting to see if the conflict will cause issues globally, with potential to cause a further increase to oil prices and deal a fresh blow to the world economy. And as stated in previous briefings, Credit currently has no direct exposure to the key countries involved in the conflict, and we will continue to monitor events and look for any potential spread to other countries in the region. So moving to the seaborne reports, we see that oil has dropped by 1% this week due to slow demand, and it was forecasted by the International Energy Agency that the US Federal Reserve might cut interest rates sooner than anticipated this year. Brent crude oils was down 81 cents at just over $82 a barrel, with US and West Texas oil dropping 68 cents to over $77 a barrel. The agency cut its global forecast for oil demand for 2024 slightly, based on the view held by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. Both contracts climbed over 1% at the end of January due to a large drop in US retail sales, which continues to provide hopes that the Federal Reserve will soon start cutting interest rates, which could be a positive for oil demand. The seaborne reports have stated that Singapore lowered its growth forecast for 2024, as official data showed that the economy grew 1.1% last year compared to an earlier estimate of 1.2%. Growth in 2023 was largely driven by other service industries, which grew by 3.9% year on year. The Ministry of Trade and Industry stated that information and communications, as well as transport and storage sectors, also drove growth. Singapore's forecast for this year is looking relatively the same, with manufacturing and trade sectors expected to see a gradual pickup in growth and the economy looking to ease in the second half of the year as inflation pressures will start to slowly decline. So to finish off this section, Seaborne's report once again holds steady their figures from previous regarding the changes to their global fleet, with both the Handymax and the Panamax set to lose over 15% of their fleet in the next 5 years, and their future order book not sufficient to replace this loss. So if we look now to the Baltic Index, it seemed to be a positive start for January, followed by a sharp and continuous decline throughout the month. The month began at 2099, which was a follow-on from December's high peak. It slowly declined throughout January, and by the middle of the month, the Baltic Index hit its lowest point, which was recorded at 13,010. Throughout the end of the month, the index did increase and was relatively steady before dropping just at the end of the month at 13,096. Although the index started the year off slightly up and down, we can see that it has levelled off for the start of February, with hopes of it increasing throughout the year. We can see that the Baltic Index is slowly climbing back up and is now currently sitting at 2,041 as of today. If we look to the FFA markets, we can see that the current spot price is $13,250, which has increased since last month, which stood at $11,850. Looking into the remainder of quarter one for 2024, we will continue to see a steady increase in the FFA markets, with the highest figure forecasted to be $17,000. It is forecasted to slightly drop coming into quarter two at $16,850. This shows a steady year is forecasted for the FFA markets for 2024. Although there is a significant decline forecasted for the remainder of this year, and with fears of continuous issues in the Middle East, and with the Russia-Ukraine war on track to enter its third year, geopolitical issues could again disturb the market. We will continue to keep an eye on Europe's current global economy and any ongoing effects it may cause. It is expected that global growth will likely slow down this year, but there are hopes throughout Europe and the US for some further rate cuts throughout 2024. We see that the European Central Bank have kept interest rates at a record high of 4%. The ECB President Christine Lagarde stated this week that they have to avoid cutting rates too early because it could prolong high inflation and even force the bank to tighten policy again. The ECB have agreed to hold interest rates at their current record high, but hope to make cuts by June of this year. High expectations for a March cut have been pushed back in recent weeks, but April pricing is staying put, despite a number of ECB officials arguing that cuts may be premature. The Dutch Central Bank President, Klaus Knot, stated that the current market forecasts for rate cuts could be self-defeating, as the more easing the market has done for us, the less likely we will cut rates. The euro inflation rose higher at the end of 2023 to 2.9% from 2.4%, as inflation fell to 3.4% from 3.6%. The Bank of England is expected to take their first steps towards cutting interest rates from their highest level in nearly 16 years, something that the US Federal Reserve and the ECB have already done. Despite a slight rise to 4% in December, inflation is now expected to fall 2% in the next few months in 2024, after a dramatic slump in gas prices in recent weeks. Forecasts show that the Bank of England hope to announce their first rate cut before mid-2024, meaning as early as May, taking it to 4.25% from 5.25% that it is currently standing at. This is a drastic change from November of last year, when the Bank of England was forecasting that inflation would not return to its target until the end of 2024. So moving to the last section, I'll discuss the briefing itself. So you'll see the figures in the first section showing the active RSA of 54.9 million euro with 54.02 million fully allocated. If we look to the right-hand side of the briefing, we can see that the credit index has increased for the month of January to 71, and the trading figure for the month was 8.9 million euro with all available ETR in the market fully utilised. Treasury performance decreased in the new year for the month of January to 7.1 million euro. And the exchange's performance again continues to jump ahead of all prior years by over 44%. Our list of top 10 largest holdings and top 10 rated once again contain regular appearances from the likes of Balfour Beatty and the HSE. Back in at the top of the list is construction debtors Hanson UK and Balfour Beatty, being Balfour Beatty's 11th month in a row near the top, being the largest holding on our exchange. Hanson UK is a new addition at the top since month 11, and Geogas is again included in the top 10 largest list this month, with the HSE and EKFB making another appearance. A new addition at the bottom of our list is Plassey Foods. Our donut graphs show a wide variation of our investments, with the largest sections again in wholesale and retail, health, construction, and hospitality. These different sectors have familiar debtors on our top 10 largest holdings, with regular and reoccurring ones, as well as new debtors being added monthly. Hanson UK, Balfour Beatty, EKFB, and CBRE are our main examples of some of the companies representing the construction section, Plassey Foods representing our hospitality sector, while the HSE and Lucan Lodge represent the health and community sector. These donut graphs continue to show the strong levels of diversification employed throughout credit. If we look to the performance sector, we see that month one in 2023 compared to month one in 2024 had decreased by 44%, with 8.9 million euro traded for January 2024. This is compared to 16.03 million euro that was traded back in January of 2023. Volumes remained steady for the month at just above 29%, as the value to volume ratio increased again in line with higher value and quality traded ETORs. Investor redemptions were recorded this month at one spot, €8 million, and the credit index was recorded slightly above average at 71. And finally, following on from the last briefing, our largest trade was a shipping trade this month at one spot, €5 million. Our trend section shows the interest rate for the month running outside of the current demand fix and term rates. We can see from the briefing the interest rate started below 2.06% and remained relatively steady for the first 3 weeks of the month. We saw a peak in the last week of January with the highest rate of 2.09%. And as you will all know from previous briefings, we have increased our investable rates on offer for the three products. And with Bank of Ireland's increased deposit rate and the increasing rates from the European Central Bank, we will continue to monitor the market. So if banks continue to increase their rates, we too will continue to increase ours so that your investors retain the advantage of investing with us. Our rates currently now stand at demand at 4.25%, fixed at 5% for 12 months and term at 19% at the end of the 36 months. This section further shows how demand for investable is starting to level off and show consistency. With the combination of the new rates and exchange traded securities, which many of you discussed with Patrick over the last couple of months, it is predicted that this will continue to grow. And as before, the briefing document ends with the ORSA figure of €48.2 million, and that concludes this month's briefing for January 2024. So, Patrick, do you have anything to add in relation to any update on the new ETS product at all?
Yeah, I do. But before I go there, we might make a note on for next month's briefing, just to go into a bit more detail on Geogas.
Yeah, of course. So the next briefing, I'm hoping to be the 28th of March.
Yeah, 28th. Yeah, we've... I know we've agreed a board meeting for that day, but yeah, the briefing after the board meeting is fine. But I would like to go into Geogas because I think it's a very good story.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, to go back to the ETS, inching forward, we have the structure agreed. We've got the lawyers appointed. We think we know who the fund manager is going to be, and we know who the custodian is most likely going to be, and we're arguing with the fund managers because, believe it or not, the fund managers want to charge, one fund manager wants to charge upwards on between 500 and 750 euro to conduct AML KYC on each buyer of the ETS bonds. So I'm going, well, hang on a second. Someone comes along with 10,000 euro or 25,000 euro isn't going to want to pay 750 euro just to prove who they are. So some of these fund managers are just not geared up for, the, shall we call it, the smaller size investment. They're more geared towards the €500,000 plus, where 750 is not a big feature. So there's a discussion certainly to be had on that AML KYC thing. And we'd probably have a bit more clarity on where we are at the end of this month. Unfortunately, until the European Union approves the actual process document, LTIF will obviously still go into law on the it's already in law. But it actually can't begin to operate really until the European regulator says, okay, well, this is the these rules are approved, and nobody suggests that there's going to be a delay in that. So April time, everyone will know exactly what's happening, and then it'll be a race to see who can get their product issue first. But I would think we're in a good position to do so. Or to be one of the first, I should say. So that's all there is from me. Thank you to all for attending and indeed for presenting.